Wow.
This is really nice. That's supposed to be nice. It's like suffering time, pandemic, you know. Wow. A little background. Going back, I don't know, a few months, 2.5 months, something like that. There was some attempt to appreciate Krishna's pastimes, and it's been a nice journey. We went to the spiritual world. That was really nice. Went to Vaikuntha, we went to Ayodhya, we went to Dwarka, we went to Vrindavan. It was really nice. And then once we were in Vrindavan, we wanted to stay in Vrindavan for a while, so we've been covering chapters. One set of Bhagavatam in the morning, another set in the evening. So at this point, the evening discussion is just completing chapter 11, which comes right before chapter 12. And chapter 11 is Krishna's childhood pastimes in Vrindavan. And then chapter 12 is killing of Agasura. But chapter 11, just a little background, because what we're going to do, what will be happening when I finish doing like this big picture overview thing, we'll complete chapter 11 and then we'll go to Gopalchampu, which kind of Jiva Goswami having fun describing Krishna's pastimes following from the beginning of chapter 11. So chapter 11, commences in Gokula, and it comes right after chapter 10, where the twin Arjuna trees are knocked over, and that comes after, you know, the Damodar Leela. So, after the twin Arjuna trees are knocked over, the elders get together and have an elders conference in Gokula, headed by Upananda. Upananda is the elder brother of five. Nanda is the middle brother. And when it was time to name the successor, Upananda deferred to his middle brother Nanda, said he's actually the best. Look at my name, I'm Upananda and he's Nanda. So he should be the king, so he became the king. And long story, but they're living in Gokula because there were no children. Nanda Jasoda left Nandagram, moved to Gokula, as did Kirtida and Vrishabhanu. And there Radharani was born and Krishna was born in Gokula. And Krishna lived there for 3 years, 4 months, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And the elders' conference decided, basically, keeping it simple, for three main reasons we should move. One, dangerous for the children. Two, better grazing territory for the cows because after all this time, the cows have trampled the ground and it's kind of mashed. And the grass isn't as abundant as over on the other side of the River Jamuna. And the third is it's safe over there. There's no wild animals and it's under the protection of the king. So if you agree with me, let's go tomorrow morning. We got to milk the cows first and then we'll go in the morning. So that's what happened. Very elaborate description of, this is going to sound like a 22nd Avenue recording. It's okay. Fresh air. They put everything on bullock carts. And there's a very detailed description of how they made this transition. They went, okay, here's River Jamuna running north and south. Gokula is on the eastern side of the River Jamuna. They're going to go to the western side. They decided to go way up north to stay away from you-know-who. Kamsa. So they went far enough away where he wouldn't know what was going on because he wasn't good at getting spy system going. And they crossed the River Jamuna, and then they settled in the Vrindavan forest that gives the dimensions, 2 yojanas by 1 yojana, that's 16 miles by 8 miles. Dense forest, kind of like virgin forest. They put on one side was the bank of the River Jamuna. So here's the Vrindavan forest, rectangular. And up here was the place where they crossed, and due south was Mathura, and due east of Mathura is Govardhan, and then north is Govardhan, and then Nandagram, kind of like, you know, at 10 o'clock up there. So they were really happy. The children are safe, the cows, they're moving happily. And Krishna and Balaram, all of this happened, our acharyas say, because of Krishna's desire. He had friends. The cows, the peacocks, the trees, the creepers. Krishna's had friends. And he wanted to give his association to his friends over there in the Vrindavan forest. So when he got there, he was really happy. He's always happy, but he was transcendentally happy. The banks of the River Jamuna, Govardhan Hill, and Vrindavan forest. So now he's 3 years, 4 months, but remember, he's the personality of Godhead, so he's a little precocious for his age. He's like a 5-year-old or even a 7-year-old, according to the Acharya's description specifically. And they were doing all kinds of children's activities. That's abundantly described. And he had a really profound affection for cows. So even they're really little boys, they wanted to go with Nanda Maharaj, and they were with the cows. And because they're with Nanda Maharaj, it worked out. But they wanted to have their own cows. And finally it was settled. There's some beautiful descriptions. It was settled. He can take care of the calves. He says, they had a big festival because he's going to take care of the calves and follow the family business. And then they did, you know, little boy things all day long with the calves. And then they, in the course of chapter 11, is having the encounter of the Vatsasura. And that's a nice exchange, how that happened. And then the coward boys, well, one of the nice things. Krishna knew, and he pointed out to Balaram, you know, see that calf over there?
Yeah.
It's not a calf. It's a demon.
Oh.
And I think I should kill the demon. Balaram, people won't... You're not supposed to do that. We don't kill calves. He said, they'll understand. You'll get a bad reputation. He said, they'll find out that he's a demon, so don't worry. Okay, I'll help you. So they made a plan. The plan was Krishna decided to scratch under the chin and rub the forehead of each of the calves. And one by one they come, moo, because they wanted, they wanted Krishna's touch. And Vatsa figured out this is my chance. So he came forward. Krishna quickly went behind, grabbed his two hind legs and his tail, twirled him around by centrifugal force. The soul left the body, and he's whirling him around in his gigantic demon body, manifested. And he's whirling him around and whirling him around, a three-year-old boy, and threw him in a kapita tree because they wanted some kapita fruits to play with. And the boys went, wow, that was good. Let's have lunch. And, some time passed, and now they're way, way, way up north in northwest from Vrindavan Forest. Near Nandagram, they went to take water for the cows, for the calves. And they saw something they never saw there before, and that was looked like a mountain peak that kind of got knocked off by a thunderbolt or something. They got closer, no, it's not a mountain peak, it's something else. It's some kind of an animal, and then it was a crane or a duck. Now Krishna went, because he didn't like, I'll explore. He knew exactly. And then he got in the beak. He allowed himself to be placed in the beak of Baka. He was benedicting Baka. Just like because Baka was the brother of Putana, one of the brothers. And he was taking revenge. Plus he got the word from Kamsa, go get him. So, and he lived, interestingly, he lived there. He lived near Nandagram in Braja. That was quite a surprise. He didn't come from Mathura. He lived in, so anyway. When Balaram and the cowherd boys saw Krishna in the mouth of Baka, they fainted. It's very similar to when Krishna's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. Like, they're used to, we're in trouble, they call out to Krishna, here's Krishna in trouble. The Acharyas describe over and over, Balaram is omniscient and he's all-powerful. And he knows it. But his affection for Krishna is so strong, he fainted. His affection overwhelmed his understanding of himself, and that's Vrindavan. And then when Krishna made his body as hot as fire, Baka couldn't take it. He spit him out. And the cowherd boys woke up and celebrated, and Krishna bifurcated him when he tried to bite him with his beak. And the boys went, wow, that was really good. Let's take the calves back to Braja. So the cows come back to Braja, and the cowherd men hear from the boys, you know what Krishna did today? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Whoa. And then they have all kinds of emotions, like protecting Krishna emotions and who is he emotions, and it must be that because he's so pious that the Supreme Lord protected him, and demons, they always lose when piety prevails. And Nanda Maharaj, he's the the exemplar of good conduct and high culture. Must be his piety protected his son. So they were going on about singing songs and glorifying Krishna like that. And that's where we are. And we'll finish the chapter. Just that finish the chapter means there's a few more commentaries related to this topic. And then we'll go to Gopalchampa, which is really nice. Okay. I think this is the last verse of the chapter, 10:11:59. In this way, Krishna and Balaram passed their childhood age, Komara, childhood age in Brajabhumi by engaging in activities of childish play such as playing hide and seek, constructing a make-believe bridge on the ocean, hint, and jumping here and there like monkeys. And there's no BBT commentary. Here's Jiva Goswami's commentary. This last verse also occurs at the end of chapter 14. What's chapter 14? That's Brahma's prayers. And after he finishes his prayers, what does Krishna do? Nothing. Because he wants to go back and be with the cowherd boys. So he circumambulates Krishna. Krishna goes back to the cowherd boys. And then they start playing. So this is chapter 11, chapter 14. They're the same age, essentially. Because he's still in Vrindavan and he's still taking care of calves. Remember, Brahma stole the calves and the cowherd boys. Because when he turns 5, then he graduates and he takes care of the cows, according to our acharyas. So, this last verse also occurs at the end of chapter 14 and is accepted by Sridhar Swami. Previous Kumara pastimes are repeated to produce astonishment through recollection. Astonishment is one of the secondary rasas, and by reading all these commentaries, I'm starting to appreciate how this and that in the narration, the cowherd boys are experiencing rasa, sakya rasa, and secondary rasas. And the readers, by hearing about them, the potency is there to stimulate those same experiences, primary and secondary rasas. The verse is again repeated at the end of chapter 14. It should be accepted since the commentary called Samban Dokti, Dokti has explanations in both places. Jiva Goswami. Sanatan Goswami writes, this last verse also occurs at the end of chapter 14 and is accepted by Sridhar Swami. It says basically the same thing. Here's commentary from verse 37 of this chapter. Much earlier is 37. They're little boys who are just learning to talk. They've come to Vrindavan and they're speaking like little boys speak. In Gopalchampu, it describes how they talked with one another while they're in the bullock cart crossing the river Jamuna, talking to Mother Dasoda and Rohini. It's really cute. A broken language. I mean, he's the personality of Godhead. He knows how to talk properly. He's performing activities that he enjoys and that they enjoy, and he enjoys their enjoyment and they enjoy his enjoyment, and that's what Vrindavan is. So, Krishna and Balaram acting like small boys, talking in half-broken language, gave pleasure to all the inhabitants of Braja. That's text 37. In due course of time, they became old enough to take care of the calves. And then he summarizes Vishwanath. The sequence of events in Mahavan, according to age, is as follows. This is in Gokul. Killing Putana. Breaking the cart. Name-giving ceremony. Crawling. Walking. Killing Trinavarta. First showing of the universal form. That's, he yawned. When Mother Jasoda was feeding him, and she looked in his mouth as he was yawning and saw the universal form. Dancing for the gopis. They would clap their hands and say, dance very nicely and I'll give you half a sweetmeat, and he would dance. Ask him to sing and he would sing. Then he would tumble to the ground. They would pick him up and embrace him. And buying fruit. Pulling the calf's tail. Eating dirt. Second showing of the universal form. Stealing yogurt. Being bound to the mortar. Yashodas calling the boys for lunch. And entering Vrindavan. Now the pastimes in Vrindavan begin. They please the people of Braja by their childhood actions and charming speech as previously. Paragraph. In the same Kumara period, Svakalena, they begin herding the calves. The two ended their Kumara period at the end of 4 years. Now some acharyas say five. And also, they have a different way. It seems that they have a different way of describing age. Like if it's, some say 3 years, 4 months, and some say 4 years. Anyway, just pointing it out. There is, transcendental different picture of the age of Krishna as he matures. Okay, so I'll read the sentence again. The two ended their Kumara period at the end of 4 years, though normally it ends after 5 years, for it is said, quote, oh, sage amongst kings, Shukadev to Maharaj Pariksit, within a very short time, both Balaram and Krishna began to walk easily in Gokula, on their legs without the need to crawl. That was chapter 8. So, this is different, but according to Vishwanath Chakravarti, 3 years, 4 months in Gokul or Mahavan, 3 years, 4 months in Vrindavan forest, after which they shifted to Nandagram, and then it was 11 years, 8 months, he left Vrindavan for Mathura. So he was almost 12 when he killed Kamsa. That's Vishwanath. Now back to this commentary. In Vrindavan, they continued their Kumara period for 1.5 years. Now, previously he says it ended at when they were 4. That means they moved to 2.5. For a year and a half, they're in Vrindavan, their Kumara period ended. Anyway, since the stealing of the calves by Brahma took place within this period as well, later in this chapter, 11, it is said, this final verse 59, in this way, Krishna and Balaram passed their Kumara age in Braja by engaging in activities of childhood play. They really get into, this age begins and ends, and then the next one. Here's a reference from chapter 15 coming up. When Balaram and Krishna attained the age of Poganda, 6 to 10. While living in Vrindavan, doesn't mean Vrindavan Forest, but they're still in Vrindavan, Nandagram, the cowherd men allowed them to take the task of tending cows. So after his fifth year, he turned 6 and they took care of the cows instead of calves. However, not to confuse things, Harivamsa says concerning their playing in Mahavan, quote, Krishna and Balaram passed their Kumara period and stayed in Mahavan till the age of 7. Uh-oh. Quote, age of 7 should be understood to mean that they acted like 7 years old. Oh, phew. As with other contradictions, some people explain that this description is from a different kalpa, which door do you like? So now that's the end of the commentaries on chapter 11. And we'll go back to Gopal Champu and how this chapter 11 begins. And it's the scene, how Gopal Champu is structured, is there's two speakers. They're introduced towards the beginning. Their names are Madhukanta and Snigdhakanta. And they are introduced to Nanda and the Vrijbasis as disciples of Narada. And they were blessed by Narada by omniscience. That's a pretty nice blessing. And they know all about Krishna. So they're narrating Krishna's pastimes to Nanda Maharaj and the Vrijbasis. That's the scene. So, Mother Jasoda said, quote, what the boy says is true. If we make them stay here, their hearts would break. The boy, his cows, and his friends have made the forest their home. They're now in Vrindavan. Krishna smiled and said, Mother, there are no dangers to fear in the forest. Keshi and the other demons were killed, all pulled up by their roots. Mother Jasoda said, what did I hear? I heard all those demons became ghosts. They may attack you as ghosts. Krishna smiled and said, Mother, they did not become ghosts. Rather, because they died in the land glorified by the touch of the dust of your feet, they all attained liberation. You little boy. Sometimes we make statues of these magician demons, but that is only for our playing games. The games of Krishna and Balaram are described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam, this 10.11.59 and 10.14.61. These concluding verses that are in both chapters. In this way, Krishna and Balaram passed their childhood age in Brajabhumi by engaging in activities of childish play, such as playing hide and seek, constructing a make-believe bridge on the ocean, and jumping here and there like monkeys. It doesn't say they built statues of killed demons and played with them, but they did that too. Hearing this, the elder ladies gave up their fears. With great love, Krishna's mother placed her left hand on Krishna's back and her right hand on his chin. Then, with tears in her eyes, she said to Balaram, Child, Balaram, I'm your mother. Have I not love for you from your earliest childhood? Still, I can understand objectively, impartially, what is the truth. Why then do I tremble with worry? I ask you this. When he walks in the pathways of Braja, please stay always with Krishna. And we'll return to Ujjwala Nilamani shortly. This is now from, excuse me, from Gopal Champu. This is Ujjwala Neelamani, commentary by Vishwanath on the topic of killing demons. Sometimes worship is seen in which pastimes occurring previous to killing of Kamsa are portrayed as if they were in the present, even after the killing. They may even meditate on the following pastime. That's this verse here, 1159, Krishna's childhood pastimes, etc. Though such pastimes took place in the past, the pastimes of other avatars in the present, that worship reveals those pastimes following after the special nature of bhakti and the devotee. In other words, devotees, there's this nice description of the gopis talking about Krishna while he's in the forest and they're not in the forest. But it's described as something like Sanjaya had the ability to see what's going on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, although he's in a tent or wherever Dhritarashtra was. So the cowherd boys, the residents of Vrindavan, have special powers, sometimes difficult to understand. So here's the very beginning of Gopal Champu, chapter 9, where they're leaving Mahavan to go to Vrindavan. Another day when the assembly gathered, Nanda said, "Oh, dear Snigdhakanta, these two trees attained bodies like devas according to their desire. What were those trees in a previous life? From where did they come? And how did they come to Vraja?" Snigdhakanta said, "These two were born from the friend of Shiva, Kuvera, lord of the Yakshas, lord of the city of Alaka. When they showed arrogance to Narada, Narada scolded them. He showed mercy to them. Though they became trees, they also became devotees of the Lord. They remained as Yamala Arjun trees near your future house in Mahavan. Attaining their planet, they became great devotees. They have revealed the results of bhakti." Nanda said curiously, "Please tell the story. Where are they now?" Bowing his face low, his lotus face, Snigdhakanta remained silent and glanced at Madhukanta. Nanda said, "Why are you reluctant to speak?" Snigdhakanta said with respect, "What can I say? You will come to know all of this by yourself." With a smile, Nanda said, "True. What you have said will be repetitious. By your silence, you have given us the answer. By this means, we can know. Anyway, you should make us happy by speaking it yourself." Snigdhakanta said, "We are the two whom Narada gave good results and knowledge by his mercy." Hearing this, all the people headed by Nanda called them, and again, mingling with them happily and eagerly, seating the two amongst them, they gazed at them. After these questions, Madhukanta again spoke, as it was his turn. "5 days after the remarkable events," that's the knocking over the twin Arjun trees, 5 days after, Upananda went to Nanda's house and inquired from, to his house and inquired from his wife, "Did you go to the house of Nanda today?" His wife replied, "What more can be said? Who can remain steady without going to his house? What to speak of persons like us who are related to him?" Upananda said, "If something special happened, please tell me." His wife said, "The person who has great prema also has great fear. Having eyes full of worry, unlike ears or other sense organs, though protected by their fearful mothers who performed faultless garbhadan sangskar, the two boys cause great disturbance, since no one can be fully satisfied when they see the two boys play. For instance, hear what happened today. Yashoda was busy preparing Nanda's meal, along with her relatives. Rohini was helping. The two boys went far away, fooling the nurses, considering the nurses to be an obstacle to their fun. When the nurses focused on their work for a moment, the two boys hid in a place invisible to their roving glances. Then, by playful deceit, they ran to a far-off place. They then played noisily with their shouting friends. The nurses, this is just today's activity, the nurses engaged to protect them realized after a few moments that they had been cheated and quickly went searching for them, calling their names for a long time. They finally gave up and informed Yashoda and Rohini what happened. The two boys went far off to a place where the river was very deep. Hearing this, Yashoda sent Rohini to bring them back. Ah, perhaps some trees like the Yamala Arjun trees, impelled by evil persons, or the course of the river will block their path. Please, quickly go there while I cook without interruption. With troubled body and mind, Rohini went there and called to Krishna, breaker of the Arjuna trees, who was playing on the bank of the river. Krishna, absorbed in play and controlled by the boys, did not heed her call, and he had Balaram also ignore her. Giving up, Rohini returned home and sent his mother, for whom Krishna had some fear. When she went there, she saw Krishna playing with Balaram and other boys. She called him while milk flowed from her breasts like rain. And there's more extensive commentary. It goes into the different techniques she used to get Krishna to come. She tried this. She tried that. She tried the other. She did not approach Krishna immediately, fearing Krishna would flee. "Please taste the sweetness of her calling. My dear son, Krishna. Lotus-eyed Krishna. Come here and drink the milk of my breast." He didn't come. "My dear darling, you must be very tired because of hunger and the fatigue of playing so long. There's no need to play anymore." He did not come, since he was intent on winning in competition. But she was determined. This is after the Yamala Arjuna, after binding Krishna, determination. She's very determined as a mother. She thought Balaram, an object of equal affection, would heed her words with respect, and shouted to him tenderly, "Nanda Maharaj, the king of Raja, is now waiting to eat. Oh, my dear son Balaram, he is waiting for you. Therefore, please come back to please us. All the boys playing with you and Krishna should now go to their homes." That's directly a quote from an earlier verse of this 11th chapter. Each of these are quoting verses from the 11th chapter, plus Jiva Goswami's embellishments. After she attracted Balaram in order to make Krishna give up playing and became joyful, she spoke with eagerness. Next text. "My dear son, because of playing all day, your body has become covered with dust and sand. Therefore, come back, take your bath, and cleanse yourself. Then she tells a lie. Today the moon is conjoined with the auspicious star of your birth. Therefore, be pure and give cows in charity to the brahmanas. It was a lie. It's just said later. But she knew he liked to be charitable, and it's an auspicious day. Come on, let's go. You know the Hao Palau story? You know the Hao Palau story? You don't know the Hao Palau story? I think it's a Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur text. But another time, Mother Jasoda was trying to get Krishna to come back, and he wouldn't come back, and she sent to others, and they wouldn't come back. So she went herself, and she called out loudly, "Look out! Here they come!" And Krishna said, "Who's they?" "He is the Hao Palau." "Ah!" And she started running. So when they saw Mother Jasoda running, they started running. So in Nandagram, the same place where there's a temple, there some of them were stolen, but they're stone carvings of the Hao Palau. There's no such things. It was just, she was making it up to get Krishna to come and have his meal. So we're not authorized to make up stories and lie, but Mother Jasoda can, she can do those things. Anyway. Seeing other boys coming from their houses at that time, her desire to take him home increased. She said, "Just see how all your playmates of your own age have been cleansed and decorated with beautiful ornaments by their mothers. You should come here, and after you have taken your bath, eaten your lunch, and been decorated with ornaments, you may play with your friends again." From infancy, Krishna was raised under the protection of the brahmanas. He thus stopped his play to give charity to brahmanas. Attracting him with her calling, she then approached him gently, and holding both their arms, she brought them home. Just as brahmanas chant mantras, along with worship of devatas to drive away evil spirits, Yashoda, though telling a lie when she mentioned it was his birthday constellation day, produced great joy, as if it were his birthday. Hearing her words, now this is Upananda hearing this from his wife, hearing her words, omniscient Upananda began to reflect, "These two aged mothers have anxiety for their sons, for this land seems to be surrounded by evil men. I will go to Nanda's assembly and raise this issue for consideration." His wife said, "You should again discuss in the assembly." The cowherds met in the assembly of Nanda, the shelter of all present, within the cowherd village of Braja filled with cows. They discussed why protecting the cows was not being properly done in that place. By living a long time in Mahavan, all the trees have been destroyed, but those who were elder in years and wisdom, as well as Upananda, endowed with prema for Balaram and Krishna, attained great bliss by Krishna's presence. Krishna decorated the bed of their laps most wonderfully and, holding his chin, asked fake questions. Krishna. He moved about to get various objects as toys. Upananda then spoke nicely and was in favor of protecting all the children after seeing the worrisome state of Nanda while living in Mahavan. Upananda spoke, "Though you all say that we should not stay here in the interest of cow herding, I say we should not stay here in the interest of the young children. Though Nanda's son is being protected with great care, since many accidents have occurred, what other reason do we need for leaving here? When misfortune occurs, we are protected by the Supreme Lord, but it is not proper to make the Lord act on our behalf. A person who is moving considers both the place being given up and the place being accepted. He gives up the place which gives grief and accepts the place which gives happiness. There's this Nyaya principle that's discussed by your acharyas that he's referring to. That place is unsuitable, which gives sorrow in this life and the next. Mahavan is now giving us sorrow on a daily basis. One should take shelter of that place, which gives happiness in this life and the next. The forest of Vrindavan gives the highest happiness and is most pure. In Vrindavan, there is the mountain called Govardhan. It provides everything for the cows and cowherds. The cowherds pay their taxes to the forest since they are not restricted like towns. In going from one forest to another, the king's permission is already granted. One must consider which activities will give happiness or fear. One must act quickly, for if one delays, there will be increased fear. We should leave this place without being lethargic. Whatever effort is put into an action produces a quick result. If my reasoning is pleasing to you, that it is good. If there is agreement on an object being investigated, it will produce great benefit. If you agree with this proposal, the cows give milk to their calves to full satisfaction and then set off to Vrindavan. So now the journey. Then household utensils should be packed up, and the carts with tent covers should be engaged, for in going to another place, such tents are well known among the cowherds. Almost done. Without argument, the cowherds accepted his words. When seeds are sown in proper soil, they sprout and bear fruit, and not otherwise. With the rumbling of drums, they all called out, "Let us inform Purnamasi. Send her first, and then move the village." That sound, Gosha, confirmed their name, Gosha, cowherds. Gosha means two things. When cows and humans make a loud noise, and when they reside together, it is called Gosha. There arose many indistinct sounds along with cries to the cows. And I don't know how you say this, but it must be Hindi or something. He, jihi, that's left, right, I guess. I don't know. The rumbling of the carts and sounds of musical instruments obscured all other sounds, placing the elders in the carts, holding bows, the cowherds gravely departed with the walking cows. When all the carts moved together, they made a rattling sound. And tomorrow we're going to cross the river Jamuna and hear about setting up camp. And this is just like a summary of chapter 11. I've come to understand, I'm used, in before becoming a little familiar with Gopal Champu, I've been accustomed to saying that Jiva Goswami wrote three commentaries on the Bhagavatam. And now it's really fair to say he wrote four. He loved the Bhagavatam. So, Krama Sandarbha, which Bhanu Swami finally translated, is one of those. It's like the verse by verse, at least most of the verses, similar to what Prabhupada has done. And then there's an 10th canto commentary, much more deep sets of commentaries. And then, of course, there's the Sundarbhas that's topic by topic. And then there's this summary through Champu style. Now, I don't know what the details of the Champu style means, but one of the books that Jiva Goswami wrote was a book on how to write a Champu. It's meant to be sung, and there's different, sometimes there's like real quick sections, and then a long section, verses, kind of like, you know, an orchestra composition or something like that. There's rules, and he just follows the rules, and just having a blast describing Krishna's pastimes in very interesting ways with lots of details that are specifically there in the Bhagavatam verses, but it's, you know, embellished not by, you know, a creative writing spree, but by his realizations. We had this discussion. She was asking, is it just scholarship or is it realization or combination? And my understanding is it's combination. Many of the things in the Acharya's commentaries, it's here's a Sanskrit word, and it, in the dictionary, it can mean this, and if it means this, and this is how you understand it, it can also mean that, and this is how we can understand it, and this is the rasa explanation, and this is what it looks like. And that's scholarship. And then sometimes it's just nothing that's right within the text, and they just go off and describe, like, for example, when Krishna is coming back from the pasturing ground with the cows, he's wearing a garland that has dust on it. And then there's multiple explanations of how the gopis who are in the village can know from a distance that Krishna's garland has dust on it. And then they give answers. One answer is, well, there's dust everywhere, but the cowherd boys were wiping his body with cloth, their chadars or whatever, because they didn't want dust on his body. But they didn't do that to his garland because it may have crushed the flowers, so they didn't dust off his garland. And then specifically they say that dust particles are really small. How could they see? They're so far away. Because they're in spurti, they're present before Krishna by their ecstatic devotion. They could see the dust on his, what to speak of everything else, the dust on his garland. Like that, this realization. With explanation that so it can kind of make sense, you know, transcendental sense. But we're just a little personal sharing. Once upon a time, I was a new devotee, and we were accustomed to hearing, you know, Mayavadis smash. We never knew what's a Mayavadi. But Prabhupada was preparing us. And, don't go to the 10th canto. You have to, and the cheap professionals, they go to the 10th canto and describe 10th canto activities. We don't do that. We're study. And then in the midst of all of that kind of indoctrination, he came out with Krishna book. And the explanation was there, and that explanation was Prabhupada didn't know how long he would live, and he wanted a rendering of the 10th canto that people of the world could have and not get wrong idea of the cheating people that would go to the 10th canto and say mishmash. He wanted to do that. So here we are with the 10th canto, and we always hear, we have to study the first 9 cantos, and here we are in the 10th canto. And not only 10th canto, but very detailed commentaries of Acharyas. I purposely skipped the Rasa Lila section, but you know it touches on it anyways because it's Krishna's pastime to Vrindavan. To understand the love of the residents of Vrindavan requires to understand it. Requires pure consciousness, and we don't have pure consciousness, or minimally, you know, not just a notion, but you know, a life that's lived according to the principle of we're not the body, because otherwise, we can't understand the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Even we can't understand just by hearing, like the description of. I'm giving Krishna book to the public. I mean, I don't know if any of you have had the experience of distributing Krishna books. Just when Krishna books came out, it was maybe you've seen the giant cover, silver around the outside, really opulent, and this beautiful picture of Krishna on the front. And Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there was no like, hey, that's about yoga and meditation. I mean, there's none of that indirect stuff. We're thinking, how are we going to do this? And people would look at the picture. I've had this happen many times. Oh, who's that? And if you say, that's God, no, here's your book back. He can't look like that. Why he can't look like that? Well, he can't look like that because he can't look like that. That's why he can't. It was, you know, it was confronting the sensibilities of worldly people. No, that was a particular period of time. Now, everything keeps changing. But Prabhupada wanted to give the real thing, and certainly our acharyas are giving the real thing with refinement and precision and detail. We're discussing just this morning that by hearing the pastimes of Krishna, it's a little distracting hearing all the buses and all the noise and stuff, but just focused hearing on the pastimes of Krishna, it transports you to another place. Even if you're not an advanced devotee, it's like hearing very nice kirtan, getting absorbed in nice kirtan. Even people that aren't devotional at all, they feel something. They're transported by the sound of the kirtan. It's just that kind of sound vibration. So Krishna's pastime sound vibration carries us to something closer to a spiritual conception. It doesn't match our, you know, the material conceptions that we have of reality and three-dimensional space and time as we know it and things like that. It doesn't match. But it's very attractive, very powerful, very potent. And hearing it again and again and hearing it again and again, that's what I've been doing. I kind of getting attached to hearing it again and again. Let's see if there's some thoughts you'd like to share or questions or comments or something. I think you're going to need to put that wire underneath the device. Anyone want to speak up, share something?
I have a few questions, but I'll just maybe ask one for now. What are fake questions?
What are which?
Fake questions.
Krishna would there something when crossing the river Jamuna, Krishna would say to Mother Jasoda, "Why are the trees moving?" And she would very, you know, sweetly say, "The trees aren't moving. It's the cart that's jumping." And then he would ask something else and ask something else and ask something else. And she just stayed with it and, like, you know, say something that's... that little child, little children will do sometimes.
Can I share something else?
Yeah.
When you read this line, the person who has great prema also has great fear. I started thinking how often from Shastra we are taught to, you know, we want to understand what is the application. You know, we read Shastra and then we want to apply it in our lives. And I was thinking, when you read this line, I was thinking, these specific pastimes, it's almost as though there's, you know, they're just sweet.
They're just sweet.
Do I apply? You know, there's no specific application as such, but they're really, really sweet, and it's just so nice to hear. That was just where my thoughts were going.
Well, there's no material fear, but there's a transcendental fear or apprehension from the parents, from the friends. You know, Krishna, go get, because it's coming up. We're going to deal with that next. Aristasura. You know, the gopis, Krishna. And the cowherd boys, Krishna. But when Krishna's in difficulty, or that we've been hearing in the morning, Krishna's late. Maybe another tree fell on Krishna. You know, she's... And the gopis, the young gopis are there pacifying her. Oh, the reason he's late is this and that. And so it's because of there's a transcendental feel emotion. With prema comes transcendental emotion of all descriptions. It's not impersonalism or homogenized, you know, non-emotion, loka. It's intense emotion because of intense love for Krishna. Is that it? Is that covered? You're sharing, I'm sharing. Okay. Yeah, in the back. Would you like to be the runner of the microphone?
Well, first I wanted to thank you very much. I really, really appreciated you sharing such beautiful pastimes and... I've never actually read Gopal Champu. I always thought it was kind of like above my pay grade, so to speak. So I felt like, you know, I felt very appreciative that I can have that access through you. Which leads me to my question is, you were saying about how focused hearing of Krishna's pastimes, even if we're not very advanced, we can, you know, have some experience of, you know, the spiritual world, you can say. So I guess my question is, as sadhakas, you know, obviously we also depend on the mercy of Guru in order to become pure devotees. But also on our, from whatever amount of endeavor that we can, you know, accomplish, you know, what is the balance between, you know, doing seva in order to please the spiritual master, then also cultivating our own attachment for Krishna and our relationship with Krishna?
Well, three things. I don't see those two things as separate. Here's a little Prabhupada story on that response. Radha Damodar party, all the buses joining together, meeting up in Atlanta, big kirtan, morning class. First question, Prabhupada, what pleases you the most? He's going to say book distribution, right? That's not what he said. He said, when you become Krishna conscious, that will please me the most. So they're not separate. And then a second thing, that you, this comment about above your pay grade, I've been going the direction of what I've been doing. I'm a conservative person by nature, but I'm doing it anyways. And the, one of the reasons is the sharing that has come back, because I was hesitating to go further, maybe just... And I'm going to switch horses. I'm going to go to Uddhava Gita, because that's like philosophy, and, you know, it's not rasa stuff. It's anyway. So, persons have shared, you know, I know this is not just the Gopal Champu, but the topics are way beyond my realization, as you say, pay grade. So, but... just by hearing them, it's more relatable. And part of it is, I mean, it's there's several parts to it. But so I've continued because where the train is going is important for us to know when you get on the train. And, you know, what do we understand about where the train is going? We really don't understand. But we're you know... So the commitment to be on the train isn't the same unless you really know where the train is going. And there are lots of different trains. And to stay with it, like with intense absorption, to get to where the train is going, there has to be an impetus. So that's one of the reasons that I've continued, because it's relatable when it's shared in this way. And the third thing is just flew away. But I'll remember it after we go on to the next person. Well, I guess it's a little bit like this. There's a certain sweetness when you put Krishna at the center. And, you know, what the devotees are passing through during this time, a little sweetness is good. And again, I'm getting feedback. The devotees are really, they're really liking, not because it's so high and I really like it because it's so high. It's just, you know, there's a pleasantness about, you know, the world, just you leave it behind and you're with Krishna, like, you know, morning and evening, that stays with you. So there's a sweetness. And I'm going to change the channel after a little while. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for coming. The Krishna's Leela through Vrindavan seems kind of landmarked by his interactions with the demons, and a lot of your discussion today was around that. And it got me wondering if there's any significance between the demons that were killed in Gokul and then those that were killed in Vrindavan proper, if you've heard commentary like that.
No, I haven't. No. There may very well be, but I haven't heard. There's only three in Gokul. Sorry. Anything else?
Hare Krishna. You made a comment that I really appreciated, and I wrote it down. In the beginning, you were speaking about Balaram, and you said his affection overwhelmed his understanding of himself, and he fainted, and that's Vrindavan. And I just thought that was really nice.
Well, there's another one. And this is from our acharyas, but there's the one that they regularly refer to is when Rukmini was to marry, of all people, Shishupal, and there was no way. But, you know, Rukmi and the whole thing. So she sent the messenger, and Krishna decided to come. And somehow word got to Balaram, this and that, the big armies and Jarasandha and whoop-de-whoop-de-doo, and Krishna's going to come on a chariot to take away Rukmini. So he brought the whole Yadu army, elephants and this and that. You know, he knows Krishna's all-powerful. He doesn't need anything. Already so many times he defeated the entire army of Jarasandha, so many Akshohini divisions, and it's just one man standing on the... I mean, Krishna doesn't need help. But Balaram was, I got to help him. And there's another one, the third one they make reference to. It's the same principle. And that is, Krishna is now leaving Hastinapur, going back to Dwarka. So the new emperor of the world sends this humongous army to accompany Krishna to protect him in the sojourn back to Dwarka. It's rasa. And because when that rasa is so strong, then one forgets the divinity and the rasa takes precedent. The sweetness takes precedence. Those are references our acharyas make specific to this Krishna being in the mouth of Bukka and they faint. Okay, anything further? Do we have online questions? No online questions. Hey, I got it easy tonight. Yes.
I was thinking about, like, a lot of the times publicly, there's a lot of caution about hearing about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis.
And yes.
I was just wondering if you could say something about that, because I was just thinking about this verse. There's this verse that starts Vikriti. Tam Vrajavadubir Idam Chavishnu.
Could you say it again? The truck is a little louder than you.
Vikriti Tam Vrajavadubir Idam Chavishnu. It's 10:33:39, and it's explained that one who hears about the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis faithfully, they attain pure devotional service and they conquer lust. And so there's caution, but at the same time, it seems like something
encouragement.
Necessary. Yeah.
Stop. Go.
Yeah.
Anything that I would say, since I don't know what the acharyas say on that particular topic, I'm searching for, the paucity of understanding that I have. And it's the combination of the two things. Prepare yourself before you go there, with the encouragement that when you go there and when you're prepared, you can conquer lust.
But not before?
Well, it's the proceed with, it's not exactly, yeah, proceed with caution, because look what I'm doing. And, I've 2 weeks of, just after the Rasa Leela section comes Krishna's going to the forest with the cows. But it's the gopis' meditation on Krishna going to the forest with the cows. So it's Krishna's flute, but it's their mood of love for Krishna. And it's embedded, especially in the commentaries, how their love for Krishna is super excellent. That's a nice chapter. Because it doesn't... Anyway, there's a reason why... The teaching is the best of all of the devotees of Krishna, the gopis, Vraja Vidu. They're the best. So, your question, not before, with caution. No, I've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a few years, more than most of you, and so you know, I guess that gives me some credential to go there. But when I'm going there, I'm going with people that haven't had the same number of years of Krishna consciousness or the opportunity for purification through chanting and service, etc., etc. But if it's done so there's caution, and there's also it's true, and one can get some realization. It's that the happiness of the gopis is not anything to do with material affairs. That's not them. Anyway, Krishna book has that section, and Prabhupada provided that to worldly people. Just meet somebody on the street and here's Krishna book.
What I meant by not before, just to clarify, because you were saying that then you conquer lust. So, like, what I meant is that, is it that unless you hear about Krishna with the gopis, then you can't conquer
lust? No. No. It's these pastimes are so powerful and pure that although it may look like lust, it conquers lust. And there's a qualifier. It's not just hearing, but, you know, there's a nice description of with faith and attentiveness and absorption. Then it can conquer lust. So it's a little bit like, I'll use a Prabhupada statement in a worldly example. I heard Prabhupada say many times, and it made an impression. That is, when a goal is very clearly defined, it's very easy to make steps to get there. And conversely, if a goal isn't well defined, you're not likely to get there. I had a friend in college, and he had a convertible sports car when nobody had one. It was like a new, you know, it was like cool. And so he every Saturday afternoon, he'd go for a drive. And I asked him, when you go for a drive, where are you going? And he said, I'm just going for a drive. And my reply was, I hope you get there. Well, you know, life is just a journey. There's no goal, it's just a journey. So if the goal isn't well defined, how are you going to get there? Mm-hmm. So how are you going to define the goal if you don't have any sense of what the goal is? And our teaching is the love of the Vrijbasis is the highest, and the love of the gopis in Vrindavan is the highest. So how are you going to know what the goal is? So with caution, we can look, you know, the gopis are way up there and we're way down here. So I got a long distance to go, but that's the goal. That's the goal. And here's a worldly example. Who knows if it's ever going to happen again? I'm starting to doubt if citizens from the U.S. are going to be allowed to go to China. But if it, you know, when I was going to China, there's a zillion people in China. It's like there's everywhere. It's a zillion people everywhere. So one of the common ways of traveling in mainland China is they have fast trains, so you go by train. And you go into a train station, and, you know, I spent so many years in New York, but it's not like Grand Central Station or Port Authority or LaGuardia Airport. There's a zillion people. And there's, so I get really bewildered. But fortunately, I'm with somebody that knows their way. But you know, there's a zillion people going in a zillion different directions. So you can get on a train and go somewhere, but you better know where you're going. And when you know where you're going, you can get there. And that, you know, and I was once on a train in China, and I didn't have a passenger with me that spoke English. And I didn't, like, where am I going to get off? Because I don't, you know, the signs are all in Chinese. They're not in English. You have to know the goal. So I found somebody that spoke English. Phew. And they were going to, you know. So you have to know where you're going. And it gives impetus to want to go there when you know what it is. This is just, this is, now this is on the personal side, these things. When I was a little boy, once upon a time I was a little boy, and I asked, what's it like? What's heaven like? What's the kingdom of God like? And I didn't ask, you know, why the tree's moving. But I asked, you know, what's, so nobody knew. And this is a long story, but nobody, so how am I supposed to want to go to a place that nobody knows, but you're supposed to want to go there? And then I came in contact with Krishna consciousness, and then here's the kingdom of God. There's heaven, there's the kingdom of God, and there's the distinction between, let's go. Here's that's what we did. Here's Vaikuntha, here's Ayodhya, here's Dwarka, here's Vrindavan. This is what it's like. It's a very different place. I mean, there's fear, and there's other emotions. It's not, you know, it's not bland. But it's a very different place. Anyway. So there's benefit in hearing like that, and so same for overcoming lust, the specific question. One has to be qualified in order to hear faithfully and with full attention in a spiritual conception. Otherwise, it'll just increase lust. Because you'll see, you know, worldly people with a worldly speaker, they like it because it incites their lust. So we should be cautious, proceed with caution.
There are some questions on the internet. From Sumati Nandakumar, how can we address someone who's new to this great literature?
How can we address someone who's new
to this great literature?
This great literature.
Literature. About the ghastly killing of Kshatriyas.
Could you take your mask off? I could probably hear you better.
About the ghastly killing.
Much better.
About the ghastly killing of Kshatriyas by Lord Parshurama, creating bloody lakes, Bharata killing Gandharvas, etc.
Well, you know, you might want to skip those sections. But if you're going to go through those sections, then you better be ready to offer, you know, a cogent explanation. Because otherwise they'll walk away. Pritranaya sadhunam. Take, it depends on the person, but the person, Prabhupada spent so much time describing the necessity of protection, and a certain section of society must be there for protection, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes to protect. And sometimes people have to be curbed, and some people they have to be eliminated, because they're so... terrible. Anyway, it depends on the person how to address. But some people are. I heard Indradumna Maharaj tell the story when his, because he's from Detroit, right? Or the area, it's Michigan or something. And when he joined, his mother was like, sound a little bit like my mother. He'll get over this. And when he didn't get over it, she came to visit the temple. And the first thing she saw when she came to the temple was a picture of Lord Nrisimhadev tearing apart her Anyakashipu. And she just stood there and looked at the painting. It was a little, and is this your God? That was her introduction to the Hare Krishna temple. He didn't say what happened after that, but...
A continuation to that question.
It continues?
Yes. In other words, what is the significance of all these pastimes in Bhagavatam?
What's the significance? Krishna's protection. Pritanaya sadhanam vina shayacha duskritam. And he liberates them. One of the things that we should understand, our acharyas explain, depending upon each interaction, always there's a position of elevation. Always, so it's not always liberation, but elevation. And that example is given specific to Hiranyakashipu. He didn't see Lord Nrisimhadev as God, but his next life he came incredibly opulent. Anyway, without all the embellishments, there's elevation. Relieved of sinful reactions by being killed, but not always liberated, depending upon their regard. But Shishupal, he got liberated because he had super intense animosity towards Krishna, but he had an understanding of his divinity. And ultimately, when the Sudarshan Chakra came and he saw the blazing of the Sudarshan Chakra, that's where he went. But the others didn't. Just so it elevation, but not necessarily liberation. But always purification and elevation. When although it looks horrific, or bloody, or ghastly, or whatever, it's purifying. Purifying. Okay. That's it. More.
One more question. In Bhakti Riksha, someone asked, how to determine who's my spiritual master from so many wonderful disciples of Prabhupada? How to best answer that question? This is from Satish Bhatnagar.
If you remind me, I'll send, there's like, 18 different ways of answering that question. You remind me and I'll send you the 18 different ways of answering that question.
And one more came up, Maharaj. Please advise, we are reading Krishna book with 11 and 13 years old, my children. Should we skip Rasa dance and stealing Gopi's garments chapters? Hare Krishna.
I don't know. I'm not a parent. I think you can ask other parents. Generally, little boys, they like the battle scenes. I've learned that. So they just want to hear that one again and again, and they know it, and they can tell it to you and stuff like that. But so it depends on the personality. Being a conservative person, I probably would skip those sections because what are they going to understand about it? Maybe get a misunderstanding and so forth. That's what I would do. Is anyone else? And we're... Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.